interesting festival because it's not required anywhere in the Tanakh. You don't find it there at all. In fact, interestingly, the only way that we know about Hanukkah today, especially in the Christian community, is that Yeshua celebrated it. It's only found in John, where Yeshua was at the temple for the Feast of Dedication, and that's what Hanukkah means, dedication. It's a joyous 8-day celebration, and it commemorates the victory of the few over the many. It's a really wonderful day in the fact that it expresses that God is in control of everything. It doesn't make a difference what it looks like, who's there, who's not there. But the biggest mystery of all about Hanukkah is how do you spell it? It's interesting because we have three ways of spelling it. And the reason being is that because English and Hebrew don't share all the same sounds and none of the same letters, we use transliteration. And transliteration is spelling of a word in one language with the alphabet of another language. So there are so many words that we transliterate in Hebrew that are pronounced differently depending on the sect of Judaism. The Sephardic people say it one way, the Ashkenazi people say it the other way. But the reason for the spelling is that Hanukkah, the first letter of Hanukkah, has a very unique pronunciation. And that's how you can tell somebody that studied a little bit of Hebrew versus people that have not studied Hebrew. They don't know how to say the ha. Ready? Practice. Ha. And thus you get Hanukkah. Right. See? You're already experts. I can hear it here. The reason that it's spelt with an H sometimes is because people can't do the ha. So they do ha, like Hanukkah. And then the other part of it is that the people think the word starts with H. In the Gentile world, you mostly see the H. You don't see the CH on there. And also with the end letter. The end letter is the sound of an H, except when it comes at the end of the word, then it's silent. So you have the cutoff version of Hanukkah. No H on the end. But the real word is Hanukkah. And now that you all know it, you'll be pronouncing it properly. You'll know how to spell it. But what is Hanukkah? And Hanukkah is a confusing festival because it really wasn't a big player in Jewish history. It became really big in our century here because Hanukkah became the competition for Christmas. Okay? The Gentiles have Christmas, they give a present away. The Jews have Hanukkah, we give 8 presents away. Okay? So, but it has nothing to do with Christmas. It has nothing to do with gift giving. This is all has been added on later. People decorating the whole house with Hanukkah lights. And all you need is a menorah or a Hanukkiah. You don't need to try and compete with your neighbors. You're supposed to be a light. One little light draws more attention than a whole bunch of lights. And that's where you are. You're supposed to be that light. You're supposed to be the different type of person. But to understand Hanukkah, you have to go back in time. Okay, put yourself in the right frame of mind and go back 2,200 years ago when Alexander the Great had the Hellenistic kingdom and he ruled over the Middle East. And the Hellenistic or the Greek culture seemed to take over. See, Alexander was really smart. When he conquered somebody, he let them keep all their customs and traditions. He just infused it with the Greek culture. So it was very easy for the Jewish people to accept, and many of them did accept it. We see that Greece would eventually be replaced by the Persians. Okay, this was Hellenism first. First we had the Greece, and Greece replaced the Persians, I'm sorry. So when Greece replaced the Persians, then everything changed for the Jewish people at that time. They were given a lot of liberties, but they also almost were forced to change into a Hellenistic mindset. Many Jews would take on different names. That's why when you read sometimes what they call the New Testament, you see that they have two names. One's Greek and one's Hebrew. And the reason for that is a lot of Jewish people took on Greek names. We see that over the years when Jewish people came to this country, they changed their names because they wanted to assimilate. You know, you get tired of being Jewish after centuries when all you have is persecution, persecution, persecution. But that's what's in store for God's people. God's people will always be persecuted because they're enemies of the world. The world looks to get rid of your God and say that all gods are equal. Even if they have no name, they're all equal gods. Well, Hanukkah is about persevering under pressure when everything seems to be lost, when nothing's going right any longer. After Alexander, we have the Seleucids come in. Okay? And they came in and they would eventually put this person that we call Antiochus in charge. I'm just trying to give you the breakdown of how we get to where we're going. Okay? So then, before Rome, we had the Seleucids come in. And this is where we get Antiochus. This is the person that you hear about that desecrated the pig in the temple. Antiochus Epiphanes. Okay? And he ruled everything, including Jerusalem. He tried to root out the local religions in his empire. In Judea, that meant outlawing circumcision, kosher foods, Jewish Sabbath, and in 169 BCE, introduced pagan sacrifice in the temple. The Jewish people, being so small, really couldn't do anything about it. They sort of went along with it. And then we move on through history. Okay? Before Rome began, after Alexander. Okay, they had complete control, and now it was going to be changing over to Roman control. After Alexander, before Rome, Antiochus Epiphanes. He was defeated by Rome in Egypt in 168 BCE or BC. Rebellion. When is rebellion good? We look at our country and all we see going on is rebellion. Everywhere it's rebellion. Rebellion is necessary to bring about change. And God's people, okay, when they look for change, they don't look for a secular change. They look to bring God's kingdom back into this earth. You don't have to look hard and long to find out that God is pretty well eliminated in this country. Okay? We don't want any part of him. There's something that just came out yesterday with the Common Core program in some of the schools where they cannot celebrate or mention the name of God, but they can mention the name of Allah. This is how it's changed. This just came out yesterday in a school district that's being sued. But this is how far we're straying. And this was the state of Judaism back in the days of Antiochus. They had little information going on there. But then from the mountaintops in the caves of Judah, a rebellion took place. And it became known as the Maccabean Rebellion. A group of priests that were up in the caves hiding from Antiochus. And those Jews have abandoned their traditions in favor, stayed down in the cities, and just went along with everything that the Romans and Antiochus were going to do. I'm going to rush through these slides quickly here. Okay, this brings us again to the Maccabean Wars. Mattathias the priest refused to compromise. He killed Greek soldiers, forcing him to worship Zeus in Moedim. His son's name was Judah, and so he would be the famous, he was called the Hammer, because he was a warrior, and he was a tough warrior. The Maccabees fought a guerrilla war against Antiochus' forces for 3 years before recapturing Jerusalem. You have to understand, this is the history of the Jewish fighters. When they regained Jerusalem and Israel back in 67 and in 48, all of a sudden, this little group of people were able to defeat all the nations around them. Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. He was there all the time. Every time it looks like the Jews are on the verge of extinction, Yahweh steps in. That's the whole concept behind Hanukkah. The whole concept is that as soon as the Jews recaptured Jerusalem in 166, they immediately began to cleanse the temple of its ritual impurities. And on the 25th day of the Jewish month of Kislev, they made the first burnt offering in the rededicated temple. That was the first Hanukkah, again meaning dedication, and it has been celebrated beginning on the 25th of Kislev ever since. So it goes down, it goes down. It seems to go out of style somewhere along the line. Then all of a sudden we come across Yeshua and John, and it says he was in Jerusalem. It was wintertime, and it was the Feast of Dedication. So it's letting us know that in the times of Messiah, Hanukkah was being celebrated, and he went to Jerusalem to celebrate Hanukkah with them. So while it's not a biblical mandate, it's something that the Messiah did. If the Messiah saw fit to go to Jerusalem to celebrate the Feast of the Dedication, then we need to follow suit with him. Okay, again, there's no special things that go on around Hanukkah. There's no call for an assembly of any kind. It's just a time that we step back, light the Hanukkah, the menorah, and remember that nothing is impossible without God. No matter what circumstances you're going through, no matter what it looks like, no matter how everything's falling apart on you, he is still in control. He will still come. He's still your redeemer. He's still your protector. We don't know why we have to go through much sorrow, so much heartache, so much problem, so much pain in our life. But we know at the end of it all, he's there. In the middle of it all, he's there. In the beginning of it all, he's there. And that's what this feast is about. And for us to get caught up in something more than that puts us right in with the rest of the world, where our mind is buying Hanukkah gifts and having a Hanukkah bush rather than a Christmas tree. This is all absurd. There's no such thing as a Hanukkah bush because Moses saw it burn. Okay? You know, it's not about a decoration. It's about understanding what our God is capable of doing when everything seems like it's lost in your life. When you have no hope left, you still can trust God. That's the story of Hanukkah. So why is Hanukkah then 8 days long? Everybody knows the story of the oil. It's a story. Nobody knows that happened. We know the dedication of the temple happened, but the oil lasting 8 days, you can't find that in the history books of Josephus, and you can't find it even in the Talmuds. It's not there. It was embellished. The first Hanukkah celebration lasted 8 days in imitation of the 8-day festival called Sukkot, which the Maccabees had not been able to celebrate in their mountain caves. Remember, the idea of Sukkot is to build the booth and to live in that booth for 8 days to remind you that God is in control and that you're only a temporary dweller in this planet. Well, they couldn't do this. Maccabee couldn't do it. So as soon as they dedicated the temples, they called it the Second Sukkot. The Second Sukkot may have been suggested by the law in the Torah that if a person is prevented from celebrating Pesach, Passover, a second Passover was to be kept a month later. In the case of Sukkot Hanukkah, there were hymns and processions with garlands and branches. Our emphasis on the little jar of oil for temple lamp is missing from the Apocrypha, from Josephus, though there was a rekindling of the menorah. Okay, so we're not going to take anything away from the light, because that's the first thing they had to do, is rededicate the temple, and the only light they had would have been the menorah to do it with. The second book of Maccabees explains that the mitzvah of celebrating 8 days of Hanukkah was actually invented as a substitute for the celebrating of the 8 days of Sukkot. So in the book of Maccabees, which you don't find in your Bibles, and it's interesting, really one of the few places you do find the book of Maccabees is in the Catholic Bible, and they have Maccabees 1 and 2. Now that's strange for them to maintain. And 4? I didn't know that 4. That's strange that Catholicism would have kept this thing that deals only with the Judeans as part of their canon, as part of their Bible. We don't find it in the Jewish Bible, we don't find it in the Protestant Bibles, okay? But Maccabees, you can find it because it's out there. So the observance of Hanukkah was reminiscent of Sukkot, and not only in general terms, but in numbers of specific features that they share together. Okay, both of them have something specific. Kana Day became an 8-day festival emulating the 8 days of Sukkot. The Hallel Psalms are fully recited throughout both festivals. Both festivals celebrate light. In the case of Sukkot, through the festival of water drawing, when Jerusalem was lit up with torches. Both festivals emphasize publicizing the miracle. In the case of Sukkot, deriving from Leviticus 23:45, which ordains that your generation shall know. Both festivals are connected with the dedication of the temple. The building of the sanctuary began before Sukkot, by 25 Kislev, which was a later date of Hanukkah. The project was complete. The enemy chose to desecrate the temple in Kislev in order to insult the Jews and undermine the anniversary of the dedication of the temple. So what I'm saying here is that the temples were dedicated on Hanukkah, on the 24 to 25 of Kislev. Both are messianic festivals symbolizing the time to come when the whole world will serve one God. Hanukkah stands for the freedom to believe and worship. Sukkot yearns for all nations to sit together in a messianic Sukkot. So, again, while it's not biblical per se, it's something that causes us to look back at God's history. Has he been faithful to his promises that he made to his people? In spite of his people's refusal to do their part of the bargain that they made on Mount Sinai, has he been faithful that he said that he would always keep a remnant around? That there always would be a group, and that's what the Maccabees were. They were the remnant that God would use in that day to defeat one of the most powerful armies of its day. Sometimes we miss the fact that in Hanukkah there's a spiritual side to it. The spiritual side of Hanukkah is found in the Hebrew word bitechon. B'tichon. B'tichon actually has a very unique word in Hebrew. And it literally means to trust in God. It has nothing to do with faith at all. It just means trust, that you will trust Him. The spiritual trait that's found in Hanukkah is this trust, that no matter where you are, no matter who you are, no matter what you are, if you made God your God and He chose you as His people, He will take care of you. Maybe not in the way you want to be taken care of. Maybe we're all spoiled in this country that we need everything and want everything right away. Where other peoples in the world have nothing. So what do they seek? They seek God. See, we have too many things in our lives that'll take us away from trusting God. We have the news every day that seems to show that we have an incompetent God. We have a world that's falling apart. Where is our God? The same place He was when the world's been falling apart for thousands and thousands of years. There's nothing new going on today. The same wars are being fought over the same reason. They're all spiritual wars. They're all religious wars with one intent to get you to believe the way that they believe. And there are no exceptions to this rule outside of Judaism. Judaism is one of the three major religions, but the only one that does not kill you if you don't convert. Look at the histories of the other and they speak for themselves. Judaism requires a complete trust in God, knowing that our people went through all these crazy events in their history. From the Inquisitions, or the Crusades, to the Inquisitions, to the Holocaust, to the new move that's going on today. It's been there all these centuries, all these years, down through the years, this is what we're seeing. And we wonder how can a people that's less than 2% of the world's population still survive? How do they still survive when everybody wants to eliminate them? Bitechon. Trust. They believe when they read through the Torah and it says all these things will come upon you because you were disobedient, will happen. And they also believe in all the prophets that say there will be a restoration, that God will restore that elect that He's picked, that remnant that He's saving for Himself, that will be like the Maccabees, that will come out and actually fight the battle that needs to be fought. We have people that talk about spiritual battles, and they're very spiritual people, but they're praying the wrong way. They're not praying God's will. They're requesting God do something, like kill the enemy. That might be His will. But our prayer needs to be that Your will be done. Whatever that will consists of, it might not be to our benefit. It might not be to our benefit, but has He proven Himself? This is what we have to come to grips with. Has He been faithful to the promises He made to Israel? And in looking at that part, you have to look at, has Israel been faithful to the promises they made to Him? We are like Israel, person to person. God's been faithful to His promises to us, but we haven't been faithful to our promises to Him. Remember that one day when you realized that He was your God? And you came to that revelation of who He was, and you said, as they probably said on Mount Sinai, "You say it and we will do it." And we tried, then we tried, and we tried, but like Israel, we keep sliding backwards. But that's where B'tachon comes in. It's not about faith. It says that the devil has belief and a faith in God. And he's watched God all these years being victorious over him. We don't see the victories because we live in a shallow world of 100 years. But when we go back over his history, that's all we need to be able to say, I believe in the God of Israel. I believe because he's been faithful. He might not have given me everything I wanted, or maybe he gave me too much. And the too much destroys you as well as not having enough. So what he wants only is that we first have the trust that he is who he said he is. The essence of bitachon expresses a sense of well-being and security that comes from having someone or something to place your confidence in. What do you trust in? Where does your trust lie? Do you still trust in the ability of this once great, powerful country that we live in to be able to protect you? We're at a war that we don't even know how to fight. The Koreans just proved that to us by what they did with Sony and having Sony back down. Our whole lifestyle is going to change again, just like it did after 9/11. There's a cyber war going on, and we have no idea how big the cyberware. Do you realize that they can shut down our infrastructure, our electric grids? Should that cause us to be concerned in the world? Yes. But not in God's world. They can shut all the lights off. He's still going to be a light. He's still going to get through to us. He's still going to show us that he's in charge. He's mocking at all these world events that are going on right now. He sits up there and he laughs at the minds of men. Look what we came up with. We came up with the computer 30 years ago, whenever it was. And look what we accomplished. Now look what we're accomplishing with the computer. We're at war with enemies that we didn't know we were at war with. And it's all coming to the surface now. And this is, again, where the concept of Hanukkah comes to the surface. It doesn't look like when Judah Maccabee came out with his band of rebels, it did not look like they had any chance of surviving. There was no way they could win the battle. The people they were fighting were battle warriors. They've been fighting and fighting and fighting. The Maccabees were a priest. They were a family of Kohanim. They knew how to worship God. They knew how to praise God. And they had faith in God. And when God told them, pick up the sword and let's go, they knew that he was leading the battle for them. Bitachon is an affirmation that Yahweh is perfect and full of infinite wisdom and unfailing love in all circumstances. Even in the circumstances that are unfair. Even when cruelty, poverty, and sickness runs rampant, bitachon persuades that his love will never fail. See, this is what we need to have. The assurance in our heart, not from our ears or even our mind, the assurance in our heart that he is in control. If he's in control, then we can listen to the amount of times he tells us throughout his word, fear not, for I am with you. When you go through the storms, I'll be there with you. When the fires come, I'll be there with you. He doesn't say we're not going to suffer and die. He just says, I'll be with you. I mean, who could be better to be with you when you're suffering? It's nice to have a spouse around when you're suffering, but they can only put up with you for so long. Come on, you big baby, get out of bed and get back to work. You see, what we have to understand is, at Hanukkah, if we understand it properly, our goal is to show how much faith we have in Yahweh. And when we light the Hanukkah, it's not to compete with the neighbors. It's just that your little light shines in that window. That somebody goes by and said, oh, there's another Jew. See? A Jew is one who praises God, according to the word itself. So, have no fear in where you're at right now. Because he knows where you are. He knows the circumstances you're going through. He knows that it's appointed for us to live and then to die. Yeshua tells us in this world we will have tribulation. He doesn't say we might have tribulation. He says you will have tribulation. That's why he gave us a body that breaks down so easy. We're only meant to be only a short time in this world, and then we go back to be where we originally came from. That's the very heart of God, the very mind of God. That's where we're heading. Many wonder, how can I have confidence in God? Confidence that he will take care of me, that everything will work out for the best. But then you might say, well, maybe I don't deserve the best because I'm not always good. Neither were the people in the Bible. They weren't that good either. When you start looking at their lives, you see they're just like you. They have the same problems you have. Human beings are all the same. It said that God never changes, neither do human beings. They stay the same. They're greedy. They look out for themselves most of the time. And that's why when you see most of Messiah's teachings, it's always about what are you doing for other people? If they want to know God, they have to see it in you. You're the light. He says you don't hide your light under a bushel or a basket. You let your light shine even when you know the enemy's around. You would think that when the enemy's around, you want to be in darkness so they don't find you. No, that's not the case with the people of God. The people of God need to be able to stand up and be proud of who they are and what they are in God. Proud enough that they don't use it as a battering ram. God gave you his word to study, not to hit people over the head with it. Not that they should be a clone like you. If you want somebody to be just like you, look in the mirror when you get up tomorrow morning and say, do I really want people to be like me? Because only you know the answer to that, you and God. Only you know that answer. The thing right now that we have to understand is that we cannot lose our trust in the God who has been faithful throughout the history of mankind. We can lose our faith every so often. Okay, but we can't lose the trust that he has been faithful to his word. They have, perhaps, some might think, well, I've already messed things up so bad that he no longer cares about me. You see, that's why there's no time schedule with God. He doesn't have a watch. He doesn't even have his own calendar. What he has for us is that wherever you are, whenever you are, you want to make the teshuva, I'm here. When you wonder where God is, you say, well, where was God when all this happened? Where he's always been. He'll be in the hearts of people who want him. He's not going to be in the heart of somebody who doesn't want him around. If your heart is closed to God, guess what? It'll stay closed. But when you seek, you will find. When you knock, the door will be answered for you. Perhaps faith is something that you may or may not have, but trust is something that you do have. Trust is hard. In a world that we live in, where we're getting hurt most of the time by people that claim to love us or we claim to love, there was a song back, I guess it must have been a couple of years ago, like in the 40s, but that says you only hurt the ones you love, the ones you shouldn't hurt at all. That's what we do to God. It doesn't mean we don't trust him any longer, but we have a tendency to keep hurting him after the other, and you would think he would give up on us. And he doesn't give up on you. There would be not one person that would be in the heavenly throne room. I shouldn't say not one, maybe two. Enoch and Elijah. Everybody, and even Elijah we have doubts about. Only because, you know, he was so selfish in himself. He said, I'm the only one left in Israel that loves you. And God said, don't be stupid. I kept a remnant for myself. I don't trust you. I kept a remnant. But you see, God only wants that you have the trust. The faith will come when the trust is solid. When you believe that he is the God who he says he is. Not what everybody says about him. Not what all the people teach you, that he's a cruel God, he kills people. The moment we're born is the second we start to die. We're born to die. We're born to die. We only live for a season. And we come in bald, toothless, and in diapers, and we leave bald, toothless, and in diapers if we stay around long enough. The idea is don't stay around that long. You know, God, take me before that happens. But the reality is that the whole essence of who we are is set up in this word, bitakon, trust. I rely on you because I have nobody else I can rely on. I know that if I'm in the middle of a desert, there's not another soul around, I know you're there. I know if I'm in the darkness of nights and there's not even a star out, there's nobody around, that I don't have to be afraid because I know you're there. You told me there's no place that I can go that you won't be. If I go to the highest heaven, I know you're there. If I go down to the abyss, I know you're there. Anywhere you go, he will be there. And that's what we have to learn about God. We have to learn that Hanukkah is not a day of ruining your kitchen by having oily potato latkes all over the house. It's oil, you slip, you slide. It's everywhere. If you ever tried potato latkes in a small kitchen, that oil gets on everything. That's not what it's about. Okay? And again, it goes back. Can you trust him? Trust is when, in times of trouble, you cleave so unshakably to the heavens that you can pull them down to earth. That you need to go up and actually grab a hold of his seats. You need to go up there and just pull it down. Trust is a mighty and heroic bonding of love, and as with all love, it is reflected in the heart of the beloved. Your bond with God, the God of your salvation, and his bond with you cannot be shaken if you have trust, if you really have that trust that he is who he said he is. I believe that most people that believe in God do not trust that he will be able to deliver what he says he's going to do. All you have to do is look around with people. Well, I've been praying for 3 years for this. Well, you ain't praying long enough. He didn't say in your time he's going to help you, just say he'll be there. So, you see, sometimes he wants you to pray longer because you don't listen to him anyway. So he figures as long as you're talking to him, he has something going. Okay? So his goal is to get you to talk to him. But then comes the point when you stop talking and you start listening. Then you talk, you talk, you talk. That's praying. Listening to the still small voice of God is sometimes more important than talking to him. If all you ever did all day long is talk to your spouse and never gave your spouse a chance to answer you, you wouldn't have any communications. And when they see you coming, the one spouse that sees you come said, no, I'm going to talk my ear off again. I'm out of here. See? It's a combination of listening and speaking, but not just small talk. When you talk to God, don't try and convince him that you know the Bible backward and forward. Just talk to him. You know, respect him. You come in with respect. And you say, why are you allowing this to happen to me today? What did I do to you? And then shut up because they'll tell you. You know why I'm doing this to you. I've been trying to get your attention for 3 years and you're still not listening. So here comes the fire. See, this is our God. He has to do that because he said he will. He can't just bless you. Everybody just wants to be blessed by God. He can't just bless you. Sometimes he has to send down the curses on you because you just won't listen. You're too stiff-necked. Anybody that don't agree with you, you call stiff-necked. But we get too stiff-necked that we don't want to listen to God. The eternal lesson of Hanukkah is that we must trust and never lose hope. The odds may be against us, the obstacles daunting, the wind in our face, but the Maccabees inspire us to hold on and fast to our goals. Every night as we light the Hanukkah candles, we are reminded that it happened that the mighty fell into the hands of the few, the weak defeated the strong, and one day's oil lasted 8 days. I threw that part in. But the reality is, it's there to remind us not to look at what surrounds us, not to look at the doom and gloom. Let me tell you that everything we hear today is doom and gloom, whether it's with medicine, whether it's with money, whether it's with war and peace, whatever, everything is doom and gloom. Nothing, nobody really comes on in the morning and tells you it's going to be a beautiful day today, God's in control, don't worry about anything. No, you're not hearing that. So what you have to do, remember that person that looks at you in the mirror? You have to get up. Before you do anything else, look in the mirror and say, it's going to be a beautiful day, and God's in control, and I know he's watching out for me. And then, again, be quiet, and you might hear, you're right. He's watching out for you. That's what he does. He watches out for those that he loves. When we light our Hanukkah menorah at the darkest time of the year, as a ritual reminder, when we kindle trust and hope in our hearts, we dispel the shadows of apprehension and welcome in a spiritual renewal. Hanukkah is a renewal time. Again, even though it's not what we would like to see, it's so important in the history of God's people. I want to close with Haggai, so I'm going to have to move up a couple of these here. Haggai chapter 2, verses 10 through 21. Listen to it. On the 24th day of the ninth month, that should be familiar already. The second year of Darius, the word of Yahweh came to Haggai the prophet, saying, thus says Yahweh of hosts, ask now the priest for a ruling. If a man carries holy meat in the fold of his garment and touches bread with his fold, or cooked food, wine, oil, or any other food, will it become holy? And the priest answered, no. Then Haggai said, if one who is unclean from a corpse touches any of these, will the latter become unclean? And the priest answered, it will become unclean. Then Haggai said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, declares Yahweh. And so is every work of their hand, and what they offer there is unclean. But now, do consider from this day onward, what day onward? The 24th day of the ninth month, Kisev. But now do consider this, from this day on forward, before one stone was placed on another in the temple of Yahweh, from this time, when one came to grain heap of 20 measures, there would be only 10. And when one came to the wine vat to draw 50 measures, there would only be 20. I smote you in every work of your hands in blasted wind, mildew, and hail, yet you did not come back to me, declares Yahweh. Do consider from this day forward, from the 24th day of the ninth month, from the day when the temple of Yahweh was founded, consider. Is the seed still in the barn, even including the vine, the fig, the pomegranate, and the olive tree? It has not borne fruit. Yet from this day forward, I will bless you. Kislev 24 is mentioned 4 times in this chapter. Verses 10, 15, 18, and 20. And twice it emphasizes that from this day forward, I will bless you. And twice Haggai gets a special word from Yahweh on this very day. You really need to read the whole chapter to get the context. But basically what it's saying is that Yahweh will shake the heavens and the earth and all nations, overthrowing their power, after which he will anoint a chosen one of the line of David and essentially making Jerusalem the new world capital. We know all this has to happen. We know that the capital of God's kingdom is going to be in Jerusalem. We don't know how, we don't know the whys, but the fact that Jerusalem is still standing there and in Jewish hands after all these thousands of years, we know that the temple was rededicated on Hanukkah. We know the original temple was dedicated on Hanukkah. We know that it's a time of, in the time of Haggai and Zechariah, it was the day marked for the promise that the redemption would ultimately come about, not by power, not by might, but by my spirit. See? That is why the festival of Hanukkah is celebrated beginning at sundown at the end of Kislev 24. In other words, it's not so much Hanukkah that is important, it's the Maker's date. There's something special about the 24th to the 25th of Kislev. That two of the temples were dedicated on that, and the last temple was rededicated on that. There's something special that Yahweh does there, and he shows it in the miracles that happened with the Maccabees, that this is his plan. His plan is to show you that even when it looked bad, when everything was against the Maccabees, okay, when everything was against him, they trusted that God will completely win the victory for them. Not by their might, not by their power, but by his spirit. And this is what I would like you to take from the dedication of Hanukkah. First, get the right spelling. After you get the right spelling, understand that when you light that candle, whether it be electric or whether it be the flame, when you light that candle, what you're saying is, I trust you, the God of history, to do exactly for me what you did for the Maccabees. I'll put my trust in you, and I want to win this victory. So whatever you're going through, whatever your victory is in your life, if at the 8 days of Hanukkah, you turn things over to your God, the God of Israel, I would believe you should see a miracle in your life of some kind. God is in the business of doing miracles. That's what Hanukkah is about. That's what we see. We know his power. We see his power. We read about his power. We believe in his power. But yet, sometimes we don't trust his power. His power is not comparable to any power on this earth. He can cause one tidal wave to wipe out nations. He can cause one earthquake to completely destroy the land around it. So nobody mocks him and his power. They just don't think that he's the one behind all the power. But the day is coming and approaching quickly when every eye will see that the God of Israel is indeed the living God of this world. We thank you and bless you. Amen. Father, we just ask you, Lord, that we don't turn Hanukkah into a battle over Christmas, that we're not looking at it to compete. And as the same blessings that Yahweh spoke to Moses thousands and thousands of years ago, he makes to you today. Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Yivarech Adonai v'shmerecha. Yirhe Adonai panav elecha v'chunecha. Yitzhar Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. Shabbat shalom.